This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. We're going to now talk about, bring on one of our favorite guests for the hour. You probably know who she is. The modern military is full of high-tech machinery and science. And Mary Roach has written a new book called Grunt, The Curious Science of Humans at War. You may know her other books like Gulp and Stiff. As I say, the military has an entire department devoted to developing new technologies. And Mary Roach looked at a different category of gear, not the big armored tanks or the F-35s doing flyovers, but the more personal, individualized equipment. She wanted to know how do we protect soldiers from things like exhaustion, disease, and panic, hazards that civilians may not think about. And one of the major hazards of combat that she investigated was diarrhea. Yes, you heard me right. It's something everyone has dealt with. Now imagine that combined with a 95-pound rucksack slung on your back while crawling under enemy fire. And diarrhea falls squarely, so to speak, into the wheelhouse of my next guest, for whom there is no detail too stinky, too gross, or intimate for her to explore. Mary is author of the new book, Grunt, The Curious Science of Humans at War. You may know her from her other books, Gulp and Stiff. Welcome back to Science Friday.
Oh, thank you, Ira. I'm just giddy to be back.
I hope I did you justice in speaking dirty like that.
Oh, you did. You summed me right up.
Well, you write about, you say, I'm interested in the parts no one makes movies about, not the killing, but the keeping alive.
That's exactly right.
And
yes.
And where did you get the idea for this book then?
The idea came from, it's a kind of an odd path. I was reporting a story in India on the hottest chili pepper in the world, arguably the hottest chili pepper in the world, the Bhutjalokia. And that while I was there, somebody said, well, the Indian Defense Ministry weaponized this chili pepper. And I thought I needed to look into that. So I went over to this lab that worked on a lot of different projects for the Indian military. And that was where I came to realize this might be a Mary Roachable topic. They were working on a leech repellent while I was there. They were just about to be heading out into the river and rolling up their trousers and attracting the leeches and then repelling them. And I didn't get to report on that. But that's what got the gears turning.
Hmm. Our number three is 844-724-8255, if you'd like to talk to Mary. 844-724-8255. You can also tweet us at SciFry, S-C-I-F-R-I. What about military technology interested you? I mean, you've written about all kinds of stuff.
Well, it wasn't so much the technology that deals with the human body and, mm-hmm. and keeping it in working order, because it's, you know, all the things that we ordinary individuals deal with at a certain level, like just ordinary heat and ordinary sleep deprivation. People in the military are dealing with an intense load of it, whether it's sleep deprivation or heat or what you're carrying or flies in the desert or you name it. It becomes enough of a burden that there's science dedicated to trying to mitigate the effects of it. And there are all kinds of interesting labs and places to investigate.
Yeah, let's go into some of that. There's something called a chicken gun that you talked about, you write about, to test bird strikes and fighter jets.
Yeah, the chicken gun. I was attracted to that simply by the name, the chicken gun. And it is kind of what it sounds like. It's a piece of heavy artillery that fires supermarket chickens at jets or airplanes, particularly, not just the windscreen, but that's an issue if a bird, you know, smashes into the windscreen. The jet or plane can come down. It can also go into the engine. Anyway, the chicken gun it's how I set up the book, because it's just an example of how unexpected military science can be. Just these little bursts of heroics that nobody hears about. Someone invented and researched the chicken gun. And also, I mean, the chicken wasn't an obvious choice, because chickens don't fly and they're denser than birds that fly or float around in the wetlands around airports. So there was all these papers going back and forth on what kind of bird should we use, and should we make an artificial bird? And what about the situation where You know, we've got this big chicken, but sometimes there's a smaller bird that may pierce the windscreen. And then somebody actually coined the phrase the feathered bullet phenomenon. And anyway, just this whole world of science going on under the radar with the hope that it will keep planes from going down.
And, now, is this
and
a,
so that was, yeah.
Yeah. Is this a frozen chicken or one?
Frozen and then thawed, yes.
So you're not shooting a frozen chicken still in a hard shape?
No.
No.
It's thawed.
Yeah.
It's thawed,
well,
yeah.
It's doing some kind of damage with a frozen.
Yeah, exactly. That would be definitely a worst-case scenario. It's probably highly unlikely that a pilot will hit a frozen chicken.
Now,
while
just,
flying.
Just as you say that, you know, we're, anyhow, you have a fascinating, I think a really fascinating section on maggots, using maggots to treat wounds, you know.
Yes.
As you point, it's not a new idea, but using it now, there are considerations like what is the insurance reimbursement for a round of maggots?
Exactly. I have in the book, I have the Medicare reimbursement number for maggots. There is one. I don't have it on the tip of my tongue, but it's in there. They're also, maggots are, they're prescription only, I have to say, and they are an FDA-approved medical device, maggots. And you order them, your doctor can write out a prescription. There's a place, Medical Maggots, in Southern California that will ship them out, and the dosage requirements are right there. And you know, there's a little cage dressing to keep the maggots from straying, because you don't want big fat maggots wandering out, pupating and becoming flies in a hospital setting. That's not good.
Yeah, I hate when that happens. Yeah.
No.
tell me how do you dress a wound with maggots? What's the process? What, you know? Give me a little inside information here.
Sure, it's a dual flap cage dressing. It's essentially a dressing that keeps the maggots in place. But it has to be, it sounds like fairly simple, slap on the dressing, let the maggots debride. What they're doing is debriding a wound. They selectively dine on dead tissue, which is very good for healing. It promotes the regrowth of fresh new tissue. So that's an excellent thing. They fight infection. But the trick with maggot therapy, you need to replace the maggots every couple of days, because when they start to grow, they reach a point where they want to leave the wound, go off, pupate, and become a fly. So the dressing has to be changed, and you need nursing staff trained to change the maggot dressing. And there's some resistance in some hospitals. It's not a terribly pleasant chore. But it's very effective, and it's used a lot in specifically in diabetic populations. There are foot ulcers that it's very difficult to get them to heal sometimes, and the maggot therapy has been very effective with them. It's in the book because World War I was one of the first times that this was discovered. I mean, ancient, if you go way, way back in ancient writings, there's some mentions of it. But in World War I, William Baer, who was a surgeon in the French Expeditionary Force, noticed these wounds. These soldiers came in with these wounds that were infested with maggots. And of course, everyone was horrified and wiped them all out, washed them out. And then underneath, he saw this fresh, pink, very healthy tissue. And the gears began turning in his head. And he thought, some years later, he actually experimented in a civilian population. And things went very well. And things have continued to go well maggots. Yeah.
How do your patients react? I mean, you have a battle-hardened soldier coming in with a wound, and you're offering a maggot dressing. Is there some resistance?
Yeah, I asked,
or
well, among the more commonly in the diabetic population, where it's more commonly used, I asked him about this. I mean, maggots are it's a disturbing image. I mean, don't ever look up meiosis on Google Images. Meiosis being the infestation.
How do you spell that?
I'm not going to tell you. anyway, and I asked the one of the doctors who treats diabetics with this, and I said, "How do they feel about it? Aren't they are they horrified? Is there a lot of resistance?" He said, "No, because the alternative is this wound that doesn't heal, possibly amputation." And he said something about when you put the maggots into the wound, they kind of get involved, and he referred to them. They get involved with the little guys and gals, and they come. There's a fondness for the maggots, and I have to say, having been introduced to a dish full of maggots and some raw liver, with a military entomologist named George Peck. He took one out. He put one on my finger. It's the size of a cupcake sprinkle. They're kind of cute at that age. They're not the big, fat, ready-to-go pupate. They're like little, and they're like inchworms. And anyway, but the patients get into it to the point where this company makes T-shirts that say maggots on board that people can proudly wear when they're going around with their maggots in the little cage dressing. So it's, I think there's an appreciation for the healing that's going in their body. And so they have a very different take on maggots than you or I might.
Be proud of your maggots. On number 844-724-8255, there has been a history of developing military-grade stink bombs.
Mm-hmm.
Were these actually deployed? Stink bombs?
The mother of all stinks. It wasn't actually a bomb, but it was a paste or a spray. And it was something that the Brits started out, stench liquid, and then the OSS, the precursor to the CIA, in World War II got wind of this idea and wanted it to be this little subtle secret weapon that resistance groups in occupied nations could spray onto the uniforms of officers when they're out in public. You'd sidle up and sort of spray this thing. And it was a foul smell, and it also had this compound that would delay the onset of the odor, which would enable the operator to escape before the smell hit, and so they wouldn't get caught. So there was this lot of thought went into this little tube of stench, and the nickname for the substance was "Who Me," because originally it had kind of a fecal smell, and it has morphed over the years to become various other scents. So anyway, but there was a whole file in the OSS archives on "Who Me," and it's amazing. There were specs for it. Like, it has to be lastingly penetrative at 70 degrees Fahrenheit for 2 hours. It has to withstand dry cleaning fluid or rainwater. There can be no backfire. And there, in fact, there was some backfire and dribble that caused all manner of woe to the operator. So that was the original stink weapon. And then over the years, there's been work that went on all the way through the 90s in developing non-lethal malodorants, not for humiliating officers, but for clearing a room or dispersing a mob. Just a non-lethal weapon, an alternative to a tear gas, something that smells so vile that you can't be in the room with it. And believe me, that's not an exaggeration.
You've smelled it yourself?
I've smelled a number of them. The mother of all malodorants, stench soup, which was developed at Monell Chemical Senses Center, is a kind of a crafty mixture. It starts out with something that was deemed through research to be the most universally loathed and upsetting smell, and that is U.S. government standard bathroom malodor. And that was a compound that was developed for testing latrine deodorizers, and so they needed a consistent simulated latrine smell. So this exists as a something you can purchase even today. And they started with that at Monell. And then the really sly part is that they added a top note, kind of floral, fruity, lovely scent, so that when you come near and you give that first tentative sniff, like, what's going on? What is this? You'll be encouraged then by the lovely smell to take a deep keeper inhale, as it's known. The keeper inhale then being the wall of absolutely horrible U.S. government standard bathroom malodor. So it's and the mixture of the bathroom smell and the floral fruity created an element of mystery, which is also effective because when a smell isn't identifiable, it's more frightening. So it's not only repugnant, it's also scary. Like, I don't know what that is. It might be dangerous. So people tend to want to get away from it.
Talking with Mary Roach, author of Grunt, The Curious Science of Humans at War, on Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International. We have a few folks who, let me go to the phones and see if we can let them ask themselves. Let's go to Mark in Birmingham, Alabama. Hi, Mark.
Hello, Mary Roach. It's a pleasure to speak with you. I've been a fan of your writing for many years.
And hello, Mark.
I'm very interested. Hi. I'm really interested to know how it is that you came to be interested in such obscure and interesting parts of science. Was it something in your upbringing, your college education? You and I had actually overlapped at Wesleyan, and we didn't know each other, I don't think.
So I'm
just wondering, how do you embark on such a fascinating and offbeat writing career?
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mark. Kind of randomly, I was writing sort of as a general journalist, magazine feature writer, and someone at Discover Magazine, an editor at Discover Magazine, contacted me and encouraged me to do some stories for them. So that got me into the realm of science, and I don't know what it is about me that causes me to wander off into the kind of curious fringes of the human body and science. I'm not really sure. I don't know. I'm trying to think if there's anything in my childhood. My mom was very kind of straightforward and out there with the things she would refer to about the human body. I remember her we don't even need to go there, but she...
Well, you write a lot about bodily functions in all of your books.
Should I say this, Ira?
Sure,
it's not,
go
there's
ahead.
No dirty words here.
No.
Okay, my brother reminded me recently, I've never shared this on radio. My mother is no longer with us, so she won't be horrified. My brother reminded me, because he just read the book, and he said, remember that time when mom said, and this isn't, it's an old-timey medical term, it's some kind of a growth, but anyway, she said to him in particular, yes, I have a wen on my vulva. A wen is some sort of like I'm not sure exactly what it is. You don't want a wen anywhere, but I think you particularly don't want a wen on your vulva. But that's the kind of thing my mom would just blurt out. I don't know. She would just say, she was very casual in her references to kind of disturbing bodily.
So the apple doesn't fall far from the tree in this case, and you say those things, but get paid for it. Stay with us, Mary. We're going to take a short break and come back and talk more with Mary Roach, author of Grunt, The Curious Science of Humans at War, a terrific book in the series that Mary writes all her books. Our number, 844-724-8255. You can also tweet us at SciFry. Stay with us. We'll be right back after this break. This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. I'm talking this hour with author Mary Roach about her new book, Grunt, The Curious Science of Humans at War. And you can read an excerpt from her book at her website at sciencefriday.com/grunt. Mary, you talked to Mark Riddle, who was running a clinical trial about better diarrhea treatments. What's he like? What type of personality does it take to run a study about diarrhea? It must take some... You're a unique person.
Mark is a delightful combination of very funny with a great sense of humor about the topic. Like, for example, when he's trying to recruit people on this is Camp Lemonnier in Djibouti. Now, when he's on base trying to recruit people, he put a bunch of signs on the backs of the bathroom stall saying, "Got diarrhea?" question mark. He has a good sense of humor about it, but he's also so serious and so dedicated to the topic that he will say things like, "I live and breathe this stuff," not meaning anything, like not having any idea how that sounded. Just, you know, he's that dedicated.
Do you know that you say that kind of stuff too? During a conversation, you drop.
What did I say?
I got wind of this, that sort of stuff. That,
do I say that?
Yeah, you said it today. You know,
I let
it go by. But I think that if you're around writing about this enough times, the puns just come out naturally, right?
I did not say that. Yeah. Okay. Wow. Yeah, you got me. I guess I probably do. Anyway, I got him.
I feel like I'm in an Annie Hall moment here.
Yeah. Yeah. Mark is great. And Mark was so good natured because one of the conditions for my going to Camp Lemonnier is that I had to be escorted all the time. And I thought that meant, once I get there, they'll let me wander around. But no, every waking hour, I was shackled to Mark Riddle, or rather he was shackled to me. So it's good that we got along because I was there from the moment they played the Djibouti national anthem in the morning to lights out in the evening. So Anyway, yeah. but he's very he cares a great deal about it. He's very he's involved with efforts to create a vaccine for ETEC, which is a particularly nasty form of E. coli, enterotoxigenic E. coli. So it's kind of similar in the way it works to cholera, and it would be great to get a vaccine for that because 500,000 people die still every year, mostly in developing nations, from this. Yeah.
You know, you talk a lot about these are real heroes that no one hears about because they're saving lives of all these soldiers.
Yeah, soldiers and also, the civilian sphere
Do they, we give medals out for all kinds of stuff. Do these people get any kind of medal or recognition or for all that work that they do?
No, they have to make do with a Mary Roach book. They don't get That's what they get.
There should be some.
I mean, there may be. I think there are meritorious civilian awards that the military hands out. But there's one woman in the book who does work with making vehicles safer, and she got that award. So there are awards that are bestowed, but not as many as there should be, perhaps.
Well, let me see if I can take a quick call before we have to go to Andy in Charlotte, North Carolina. Hi, Andy.
Hi, good afternoon.
Hi there.
How are you doing? Mary, I love your stuff. I work for a fragrance company called Scent Air, and we do work with the U.S. military on fragrances, scents for simulators, because there's a lot of research that the soldiers that are going over to Iraq and Afghanistan, you can do realistic simulation of the type of environments they're going to get into. But if there's no scent there, you don't have the right fear or flight reaction.
Yes.
And so I was curious if you did any research on that or if you've come across that.
Yes. I'll to be real quick, when I know you're wrapping up, Ira. But yes, there was a strategic operations, this group that does simulated combat to train medics and Army Navy corpsmen who do care for the Marines. And one of the things that they used, they could probably use your product because what they were using in the case of evisceration or guts coming out, they used a product that I probably can't say on the air, liquid A, blank, blank. That's what it would smell like if the guts were torn open. Anyway, so yeah, that's part of creating the, you know, every sense, the noise, the visuals, but even the smell. So yeah.
Wow. Wow. Mary, it's another great book in your series of letting us know more than we've known before about stuff that we think we should care about. And the book is called Grunt, The Curious Science of Humans at War. It covers everything, including stuff about camouflage and fashion and stuff like that. It's all through the book and tanks and armor and all kinds. It's a great book, Mary, as usual.
Thank you, Ira.
Thanks for taking time to be with us today. Good luck with your book. Mary Roach, you can read an excerpt from her book on our website at sciencefriday.com/grunt.